your source for everything paranormal, Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. You know, the old saying that everything old is new again rings true in many situations. When I was growing up, drive-in movies were really popular. They began in the 1930s, but then they got really popular in the 50s and 60s. But over time, they became pretty much obsolete because of the indoor movie technology, starting with Cinerama back in the 60s, and IMAX, and 4D, and on it goes. But since we've been under siege with COVID-19, drive-ins seem to be popping back all over the place as a safe way to get out of the house, see a movie, and stay safe. But there's one aspect of drive-ins that people don't really know and probably don't even think about because it's, you know, kind of UFO-y, and I just don't think that people think about that when they're going and go see a movie, except possibly E.T. And so we're going to talk tonight about drive-ins and E.T.s. That's why I have author Preston Dennett here as my guest to share his new book. And he's been investigating UFOs and the paranormal way back since 1986, when he discovered that his family, friends, and co-workers were having dramatic, unexplained encounters. Since then, he's interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wide variety of paranormal phenomenon. He's the field director for the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON. He's a ghost hunter, a paranormal researcher, and the author of dozens of books and more than hundreds of articles on the UFOs and the paranormal. Several books of his have been Amazon UFO bestsellers, and he's appeared on numerous radio television programs, including Coast to Coast and the History Channel's Deep Sea UFOs and UFO Hunters. And when I saw the title of the book, UFOs in the Drive-In, 100 True Cases of Close Encounters at Drive-In Theaters, there was no way I wasn't going to ask him to be my guest tonight. So I'm sure those of you in chat will have lots of questions or comments for Preston. So if the chat room is moving really fast, please send me a private message so I won't miss it. And as always, if you're listening in, have some questions you want, join us at paraxradionetwork.com. So Preston, it's been like way too long since you were on my show, and I'm really glad that you're here, and thank you for joining me tonight.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I'm ready to start stirring the cauldron.
Yeah, you're a cauldron stirrer. But, you know, it's been so long since you've been on the show that I think I've grown a ton of new listeners. So can you kind of fill everybody in on how you got interested in UFOs?
Yeah, it's been decades. Oh, 1986. Yeah, it's been a long time. Most of my life, actually.
Yeah.
So 1986, I was a young man, you know, so like, let's see, 21 years old, heard a report on the news about a sighting over Alaska and didn't believe it for a second. I was very scientifically minded, very skeptical of all things paranormal, anything to do with UFOs for sure. I mean, the stars were too far away. I knew UFOs weren't real. I was sure. So hearing this report in the news of a sighting over Alaska was, you know, pretty shocking. I'd heard of UFOs, of course. You know, I saw In Search Of, that show. Yeah. You know, and every now and then you'd hear it on the TV, always kind of joking, and it was kind of joking on the news. They just kind of laughed about this pilot who had seen a UFO over Alaska and moved on. They made a few nervous jokes, and that was it. But they showed a picture of the pilot, and I later found out what an amazing case this is. It's very well known in the UFO community. This UFO followed this plane for miles, was tracked on radar. It's a big case. Mm-hmm. But it interested me enough to ask people about it. You know, I have a large family, 5 brothers and sisters, and I asked them, and my brother Marco was like, yeah, I saw one. I'm like, oh, okay, because I remembered he had said that, but I didn't believe him. Mm-hmm. And he described a pretty amazing sighting, I have to tell you. It was, you know, a metallic disc with colored lights. He's chasing it down the road. I'm like, Marco, come on. He's like, seriously, you don't believe me? Go talk to Greg. Go talk to Phil. They were there. Those were his friends. Uh-huh. And I knew them because they would come over. And so he's like, give me the number. I'll call him up. And they described the same story. They were very excited to talk to me. And that kind of sent the ball rolling. I found out my sister-in-law had a sighting. She had someone with her at the time, 2 people. I had a couple of family friends that had sightings. They also had witnesses with them. So mm-hmm. this was sort of one of those misconceptions I had. I thought people who see UFOs are alone. They're uneducated. They're out. There's some farmer who doesn't know what a shooting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just making excuses, really rude and unfair excuses. But brought it up at work as well. And wow, couldn't believe it. The people I'd worked with for years were like, yeah, my whole family saw it. And in walks Dorothy. I've always loved Dorothy. She's very forward and unfiltered. She's like, UFOs, oh my God. One followed us home from the library. And she described this encounter, which I could spend the whole show on, honestly. But they lived 5 minutes from the library, and this UFO followed them home.
Wow.
And they had missing time, an hour.
Mm-hmm. See, so, these are the things you hear, and then when it gets to a certain point, how can you not turn your back on it, right? I mean, and you're inquisitive enough, and you kind of soon learn that, boy, you could have had a lot of years that you were working on it before you actually started believing it, right?
yeah, and I still wasn't ready to give in yet. I'm going to the bookstores, and I'm like, I'm going to disprove these guys. And couldn't. You know, there was some books that were skeptical by Philip Klass and I think Robert Schaefer, and they were just awful books. I mean, they were poorly written, mm-hmm. and their arguments didn't hold up. They just didn't. Yeah. And I'm looking at the actual UFO books, you know, like I think there was the Walton Incident and Ray Fowler's books, Betty and Barney Hill. Mm-hmm. There weren't a whole lot of books out there at that time. Not like now, at least.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, this is bad news. ETs are invading Earth. Why isn't this taught in schools? I was so upset.
Mm-hmm. I would have been too. But here's the thing. I mean, we all grew up with the notion of little green men, flying saucers, and Martians. I mean, you know, they've been talked about for ages. And in current times, there were those events that made headlines, like Orson Welles' radio broadcast War of the Worlds back in 1938, which started a panic. And then there was Roswell incident in 1947, which is still on people's minds, trying to figure that one out. And then came TV shows like, you know, My Favorite Martian and movies like E.T. So there always have been there. And, you know, you kind of take it with a grain of salt. But I'm kind of curious. I don't know if you know the answer to this or not. But where did the notion of little green men and Martians get so popular? I mean, why Mars? Why not Pluto or Saturn or something?
Yeah, it's a good question. There are people who have looked into this in detail, sort of. Because science fiction was very strong at the same time the UFO movement came. Mm-hmm. So they're tied to a certain extent. There are researchers who are like, it's clear, you know, this is a modern myth. It's based on science fiction. But I don't think that that's true. They do have green-skinned science fiction aliens very early on. And if you look at the UFO reports, there are green-skinned aliens, but they're pretty darn rare. And I don't know what the first one is, but I know as far as Mars, there was a lot of speculation because there would be upticks, I think, in the summer, and Mars was at its closest approach during one big wave. And so they were really trying to figure out where these things were coming from, and Mars seemed the obvious solution, particularly in a time where we hadn't even been to the moon and had no idea if there was life, you know, on Mars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. It just kind of cracked me up as you were talking, and there's a 30-second delay here, but somebody in chat room said, well, because Mars was so close. So, hey, Hitman's got a good head on his shoulders, and you validated it right then and there, which is good. So, all right. So you've written so many books about UFOs and things, all kinds of different things. But one place that, I mean, I swear I never would have thought for UFO activity would be a drive-in. And I mean, you know, you've talked about undersea and all over the country and schoolyards and everything. So I guess it's not so strange about UFOs in the drive-in. But did you write this book because all of a sudden you were being inundated with stories of drive-in sightings?
Well, to a certain extent, I kind of ran across it. And I'm keeping an eye out these days for weird UFO attractors, you know, because the schoolyard thing hit me hard. I'm like, hey, I've been in this field for 30 years, and I had no idea that there were that many schoolyard encounters. So I started to look at places, you know, and I had been actually earlier, that attract UFOs.
Yeah.
Like cemeteries. Who would have thought?
Yeah, why? Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the genetics. I don't know. But graveyards, definitely. Prisons, I think, because they're very technological.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket launches. There's a bunch of areas we know attract UFOs. And did run into a case of a drive-in theater once and kind of thought, wow, that's weird. This was a lady at work, Claudia. And, oh, my God, she describes this amazing encounter when she, in 1972, Paramount, California. She's there at the Paramount Drive-In Theater. It's a huge theater.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, her mom's and dad are in the front seat. It's a Volkswagen Beetle. And her sister's next to her. And suddenly she hears screaming. People are screaming. And she looks out her window, the side window. She's just kind of fiddling there in the back seat. And people are running. They're dropping their popcorn and drinks. And they're screeching out of the parking lot. And she looks at her parents, and her parents are hypnotized. They're entranced, staring not at the movie, but to the right of the screen. And so she looks, of course. It's a giant UFO. Typical classic flying saucer, metallic. She said it was shiny silver like a spoon. So sort of chrome. Really beautiful. Colored lights. Let's see, it was making a whooshing noise.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it was like, it was sitting there watching them watch the movie.
Wow.
Right?
And yeah, so, you would think it was like some kind of publicity plot or something, you know, instead of a real thing, huh?
Yeah. Well, that, you know, that has come up. You know, some people who report this say, what you saw was a publicity balloon, you know, the champ's chicken balloon or something. but it was obvious to them what this was.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, a UFO. But here's where it gets really weird. They don't really remember it leaving. They don't quite remember what happened.
Wow.
In fact, don't remember talking about it and never even thought about it until years later. Claude is there. And, yeah, it's weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
This turns up in other cases, too. And in this one, it's definitely turned up, this weird amnesia effect. It was years later, she's in the kitchen with her mom, and someone's on the radio, and he starts talking about this UFO he saw. It was a call-in show, and this guy describes, he says, yeah, I was at the Paramount Drive-In, and this UFO came down right next to the right of the screen, and people were panicking and freaking out and leaving. And Claudia turns pale. She turns to her mom like, Mom, that was us. And her mom, you know, she's like, yeah, that was. And Claudia's like, well, why didn't we talk about it? What happened? and they could only shake their head.
That's kind of interesting.
Right? So that was the case that kind of alerted me to this, but I was writing UFOs over Colorado. Mm-hmm. This is like, I don't know, book 5 or 10 on the various states. Uh-huh. And ran into 3 cases in a row. And I'm like, what is going on here? This is weird. They are coming right down next to the screen.
Mm-hmm. And see, I was going to ask you about that because I was going to ask if there were any reports of UFOs swooping down and interrupting the movie. But clearly, you know, from what you're saying, that has happened, but nobody called the police. Nobody called, you know, 911 about it. And well, they didn't have 911 a long time ago, but, you know, it seems like it happens and it's kind of normal. And, you know, people do forget because you would think that honest to God, right now, if we all went to the drive-in and a UFO came down right next to the screen, after the people would stop thinking that it was a promotion of something, you would think that you would go home and talk about it. You would call the news channels. Yeah. You would do anything. And it seems like that didn't happen. People just kind of ran and forgot, yeah?
In that case and in others. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, no, not at all. Sometimes this causes a huge uproar and never really makes national news. Mm. It's in fact, it's pretty much limited to local newspaper articles, which is where I got a lot of these reports. Mm-hmm. Not in UFO books. There was a couple. Ryan Sprague, he had an amazing account. But that was about it. Most of these are from UFO research organizations, you know, their archives and newspaper articles. So these are new, I think, to most people. Certainly they were new to me.
Yeah.
And sometimes it does cause an uproar, like what happened at the terrorist drive-in. Oh, can I tell you that one?
Yes.
August 12th, 1952, terrorist drive-in, Bakersfield, California. It's a big drive-in, 650 cars. And the main witness in this case is Lieutenant Jenkins. He's watching the movie. There's a bunch of people there, of course. And a UFO drops down out of the sky, no warning, and it's right over the screen, right on, you know, just above it, which is what they do. Mm-hmm. Just as an aside, these are not normal sightings where a UFO just flies by. They come down next to the screen and often will stay there and sometimes put on a show. So there's nothing else like this in the UFO literature, not being viewed by 200, 300 people at a time over and over and over and over. And so what happened to the terrorist drive-in is this object appears. It's kind of cigar-shaped. It's hard to see except for these giant yellow lights on it, which kind of flashes at everyone and really only stays there a moment. The early encounters are much more tame than the ones in the 60s and 70s. Mm. Oh my God. But so this one is exciting enough, but it darts away, right? Just takes off. And so Lieutenant Jenkins, he's a military guy. He knows what he's, you know, not seeing. It's not a plane. He gets a hold of a phone and calls the Kern County Sheriff, Deputy Leroy Hatfield, who takes his report. Hatfield's impressed, hangs up the phone, and the phone rings again. It's someone else from the drive-in. So he takes a report, and after the fourth call, says, you know what? Never mind. I'm going to come down there. Just wait for me. So goes to the drive-in. There's 100 people there. The movie's over. He interviews about 20 of them. He's like, that's it. You know, because 80 more people wanted to give their testimony. Mm. And he had enough to see what these people had seen. And he described, you know, what I told you, a cigar-shaped craft with lights, very low, metallic, silent. And he writes up a report. This is where it gets really interesting. This shocked me, actually. He writes up a report and sends it off to the Air Force. Fine, right? It's good. It's rooted through Blue Book, which is, you know, just new and forming. Mm-hmm. And it is taken through Blue Book. It's not investigated by Blue Book. It's sent up to the Air Technical Intelligence Command at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Now, what's interesting about this is that the ATIC handles the cases that affect national security. the most important ones. And Wright-Patterson. I mean, if you know anything about UFOs, that's where we're holding and reverse engineering them. Mm-hmm. And that report, which was written up by the next day and marked to action, I saw it. You can look up Blue Book archives online, and I found this one. I'm like, it was also sent to Ent Air Force Base in Colorado. That's where we track all incoming and outgoing traffic, air traffic, and to the very top of government, Director of Intelligence at Washington, D.C.
So they do get reported, and then they hide it a little bit. You mentioned 1952. And in the book, you said 52 seems to be a very pivotal year for UFO sightings. And you wrote that in the summer of 52, a massive UFO wave swept across the United States. What was it about 1952?
Yeah, if you know, I would like to know. we don't know. I have my suspicions. Mm-hmm. And my main suspicion is that something happened in 1947 that attracted UFOs in very large numbers. Because while we do have historical accounts, that is when it really began. It's the modern age of UFOs. That's what we call it for a reason. Mm. And yes, it corresponds pretty much exactly with the atomic age. And that seems to coincide with the ET's extreme interest in atomics, where they're hovering over our missiles and turning them off and nuclear power stations. So I'm thinking this is like the summer of 1947, and they came in large numbers and never left. And what's 52? That's just 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I think at that point they were just moving in to do a full mapping of the planet. I'm not sure. That's one theory, but it definitely had no fear of being seen that year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And I mean, and like getting back to drive-ins, I mean, it's my best guess that it wasn't that these, well, maybe they did. Some of them staked out drive-in movie theaters to make their presence known. And you know, it's just that groups of people maybe at the drive-in movies are technically out of doors for a few hours, and they are kind of looking up towards the screen. So even if there were some that would come down next to the screen and stuff, but in general, I mean, you know, you're sitting in your car outside looking up towards the screen and in the sky, right. You know, you're bound to see all kinds of things, right?
For hours and hours, you know, often new drive-in movies were double features. So people would be out under an open sky at night for hours. And that is prime viewing time for sure. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say a good 20, maybe 30% of the cases reflect that, and that people see something fly by. They're like, wow, did you see that? Mm-hmm. But that's not what's happening here. No, I think there's a number of cases I started to run into that really convinced me that this is not just what I would call a random flyby. Mm-hmm. And I think the first real one, the early ones were amazing, too. I mean, they were coming down right next to the theaters. But it's when they put on a show that I'm like, wow, watch this. Like the Mentor, Ohio case, mid-1960s. This cigar-shaped object parks in the sky above the theater. It's kind of to the right next of the parking lot, and they can't quite tell how large it is. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty low and pretty big, and it's there for a half an hour until, you know, people in the audience started getting afraid, and they told the projectionist to turn off the movie so that it wouldn't see them, which was kind of ridiculous because, you know, it's watching them at this point. Mm-hmm. But they do. They turn off the movie. No one's watching it anyway. And this is when this UFO puts on a show. Mm. And honestly, I don't know who's piloting this, if it's teenagers or what's going on, or if they're like, you know, all right, you want entertainment? Watch this type of thing.
Showing off.
But this cigar-shaped object turns vertical and releases a metallic disc, which starts darting around, followed by another. That's 3, 4, 5, 10. It let out 10 discs. So apparently this is a mothership. And these things dance around the theater. Hmm. And put on a show and finally line up in a perfect column. And go one by one back in, like, you know, little school children. And
oh my God.
This thing turns horizontal and takes off. You can't tell me that's not a show.
No, it's definitely a show. I mean, and clearly they want to be seen.
Right?
And, no?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, you know, if any spaceship hovers down to the level of the screen in a drive-in movie, it's certainly not being cloaking in any way. I mean, you know, it makes you wonder, because I guess it depends who it is, where they're from, what their purpose is. You know, I mean, there's probably a thousand reasons why they want to be seen and show off.
Yeah, I've got my theories about what's going on here. I thought, you know, could it be the movie? And, you know, maybe the movie's attracting them. So I just looked at the movies people were watching. And I have to tell you, most don't remember the movie. They remember the UFO. But some do. Mm-hmm. And so you got a nice spectrum there of regular movies. James Bond, King Kong, Jurassic Park, The Simpsons, The Exorcist. You know, these sort of...
Yeah, it'll probably, they think it's comical in a lot of cases, you know, because they're probably mostly higher advanced than we are, supposedly. So they're looking at us as like we would be looking at cavemen, you know, in a sense. Got a question from chat room, and I think we're going to go to break then. Tim wants to know, do you feel that there's a correlation between UFOs and Bigfoot, like the Presque Isle, Pennsylvania sighting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Pennsylvania has a number of these cases. It's really strange. There's, you know, a million UFO sightings encounters and probably an equal number of Bigfoot sightings, and most of either don't involve the other. But there's this weird intersection of cases. They perfectly intersect, where people will see a UFO and a Bigfoot in the same location. At the same time, I have like three or four of my own cases. And I know of many, many others. It is so strange.
Well, you know, they do talk about that maybe Bigfoot is alien, or, you know, maybe time travel or something. So the correlation doesn't seem impossible if that's the case.
Yeah, I actually ended up, you know, researching and writing about Bigfoot to understand this. And I think Bigfoot's native to here and has, well, at least it's been around forever. Mm-hmm. And there may be two different types of species, your basic wild primate who's intelligent. But I'm thinking most of these guys have some abilities that we're not familiar with in terms of, you know, turning invisible and traveling interdimensionally and telepathy.
Mm-hmm. So it could be. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they're like somebody dropped a petri dish down here from space and said, well, here, let's see if these guys grow and thrive, you know, and maybe that's where Bigfoot came. I don't know. I mean, there's just so much speculation. It's just kind of interesting that there is some correlation, that people are believing that that's so. And it could very well be. I mean, we're not going to ever know, are we?
I don't know. One lady I interviewed who's, you know, an experiencer said that, oh yeah, we're a zoo. You know, they drop all kinds of things. You know, and I wonder about this huge number of cryptozoological creatures that people see, mm-hmm. where they're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of amusing too. But because I always see, you know, you see that cartoon about somebody looking under a microscope, you know, at a drop of water or something, and they say that, you know, we're just that drop of water under somebody else's microscope.
Yeah, we are watched very closely. And it's been a long, long time. There's evidence, or certainly indication, that our genetics have been manipulated for perhaps millennia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all weird kinds of weird missing links. Most cultures across the earth have legends about us, you know, us descending from star people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, it just goes on from there. Ancient writings where we mated with the gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a lot of guests on talking about that. And, you know, they all have very good arguments that make a lot of sense. But what doesn't make sense is half an hour is gone already. We've got to take a quick break. So everybody sit still, and we've got a question waiting in the chat room when we come back. So hang in there.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away. If you end up with webbed feet,
Remember, you've been warned. Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witch's Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear... Line?
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Yeah, welcome back. My guest is Preston Dennett, and we're talking about his new book, UFOs at the Drive-In. It was kind of interesting. I was thinking when we went to break that maybe people were going to go look out the window now to see if anything's out there, because maybe just like in Field of Dreams, if you build it, they'll come, and maybe we've been talking about it, so maybe they're listening. I don't know, just a thought in my head, but I have strange thoughts in my head. All right, Preston, we got a question from the chat room. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Cece wants to know, she said, you mean they want to be seen like a psychology test on a reaction or for a reaction? Is that why?
Yeah. I think that's a possibility. Maybe they're studying what happens when they reveal themselves to a large group of people, relatively large. Because, like I said, you know, you can look out in the UFO literature for cases like these, and the only thing that comes close really is the schoolyard close encounter cases where they show themselves to school children, and teachers for that matter. But these are adults, or mostly adults, and larger. You know, these are typically 100 or 200, 300 people. And perhaps sporting events, you know, there's a few cases or concerts, but not 100. And I think perhaps they could be studying how we react.
Yeah, we're a science project, aren't we? The more I think about it, yeah, it just kind of seems that we are. All right, go ahead.
What I really think, you know, the real reason why they're doing this, because I've thought about it. I mean, if you look from above, you can see the drive-in movie theaters are very visible from outer space. I mean, from an aerial photograph, they're easily recognizable. And I thought, well, maybe they're curious. But no, that doesn't really match because they're coming right down. Why would they show themselves? And some people are like, maybe they're watching the movie. And I have to say, there are at least two cases, I think, where they did stay for the entire duration of the movie, just sitting there.
Wow.
Most no. Most, you know, what we see is this typical weird showing off behavior. Mm-hmm. And I can come to no other conclusion than they want to be seen. So why? Why would you want to be seen? Well, to announce your presence, to say we're here, we're real. Well, then why would you want to do that? You know, why would you want people to know about you? I think that the ultimate secret behind this agenda, this weird behavior, is they are pushing towards open official contact at some point.
Mm.
Get everyone used to them, bit by bit.
100 at a time or something, yeah.
Yeah, this isn't a really effective method, because I was like counting up all the people who are like represented in this book alone. Because let's just say, you know, there's 100 cases, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If there's 100 people, say at 100 cases, well, what's that, 10,000? And there's much more than that. There's usually 200 or 300. So we're looking at 30,000. You know, there's one case involving 3,000 people.
Hmm.
So I think, and most people don't report their sightings. So any number we come up with, we can pretty much times it by 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say it's 30,000 people.
Do you think, I mean, this just popped into my head of talking about getting an audience or at least listening and learning about us. I mean, you know, TV and radio come from waves up in the sky. Do they, you think they lock into that and can kind of see what kind of things we're watching on TV and the interests that we have or things that are going on, the news and all that? Do you think they do that?
Yeah, I sure do. I absolutely think they can tap into phone conversations because I've interviewed some, you know, abductees. Mm-hmm. And the guy called me up the next day. He's like, a UFO landed in front of the house while we were on the phone. I was interviewing him.
Mm.
And another time I interviewed a lady and I asked her to go on TV. She agreed. It was just a little public access channel. And then right before the interview, well, a couple of days, she calls me up and says, they came, you know, they don't want me to go on TV.
Mm.
So they must have, you know, been watching that somehow. And yeah, I think they can tap into computers. Supposedly, mm-hmm. a lot of our technology came from them. This could be a very efficient spy device.
Well, I did hear that. And not about the spy device, but that you know, it came from them. So in the drive-in, let's go back to that for a second. Were all these cases just visual, or have people reported as being really close up and personal to more than just the ship, you know, whoever's piloting the ship? Or have there been any abductions reported from those kind of encounters?
The vast majority would be what we would categorize as close encounters of the first kind, sightings.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say 10% do involve, you know, weird electromagnetic effects where the speakers cloud up or the screen actually goes black or gets affected in some way with beams being shined on it or becoming distorted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. That's close encounter of the second kind. There could be some close encounters of the third kind, yeah. And in fact, you could label all these cases as close encounters of the fifth kind because in essence, we're calling them down. That's what I think is happening. We're provoking sightings. But there's one case in Florida. Let's see, this was Fort Lauderdale. And I wasn't able to interview the witness directly. This is 1973.
Mm-hmm.
And the projectionist announces to the audience, hey, everyone, look, there's a UFO. This is not a hoax. A UFO is flying over the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, the main witness jumps out of his car and sees it, as does everyone. His girlfriend won't get out of the car. She screams and hides under the seat. She's terrified because this thing is low.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, 50 feet up, and there's portholes. And through the portholes, you can see figures.
Mm.
And just silhouettes. You couldn't really tell anything other than that they were, you know, living beings. But definitely humanoids were seen in that case, but usually not. Only, gosh, two other cases.
So you've not had a case that somebody came to you and said, I was at the drive-in theater, and then I wasn't all of a sudden, and then I found myself, you know, back there.
No. The only case that comes close is probably one of the biggest cases. Oh, man, this guy, I'm able to get his report directly from him.
Mm-hmm.
This is August 1974, the Ascot Park drive-in, Cuyahoga Falls. Scott Santa is the witness. It was at the theater with his friend when this giant kind of boomerang-shaped object comes right over the screen, as if from behind it or rising up almost,
mm-hmm.
and is larger than the theater itself. This thing is massive, and as soon as it reaches the level of the screen goes black, and the entire theater shuts down, and every light around the area is completely extinguished. All the cars. And this thing moves overhead really slowly. His ears pop. You know, he jumps out of the car. He's looking at this. Everyone's in total awe. Kind of zombified is how he described it.
Mm.
And it moves overhead. and suddenly it's gone, or, you know, it's moving away, and the movie comes back to life, and the lights go back on, and everyone gets back into their car and starts watching the movie and doesn't remember the UFO.
Mm-hmm.
So he remembered it, like, I think it was 2 years later, 2.5. He was at a bookstore and saw the word UFO on a UFO book, and it came flooding back into his head. And ever since then, he's like, oh, you know, why didn't I remember that? Did something else happen? And I have to say, that could have been a mass abduction. We don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was kind of looking through the table of contents to see if any of the drive-ins that I grew up going to, like the Pan Pacific Drive-In in Hollywood, was in the book. But there is one drive-in story that happened back in 1969 at the Foothill Drive-In here in Azusa. And although the site isn't a drive-in anymore, it was actually the last operating, I didn't know this, the last operating drive-in west of Oklahoma along the famous Route 66. And the big signs are out there. It still looks like a drive-in from the outside, but I think a college took it over or something. But that was an interesting incident because out of all the people that night that were there watching a movie, there was only one person who saw a UFO. Is that kind of common? Is that just one out of everybody would see?
I don't want to call it common because that's not what usually happens, but that does definitely happen. And to such a weird extent that everyone should be seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they don't. It's the weirdest thing. Maybe 10% of the cases, a good number, but not most. Most everyone's like, oh my God, look at this. And sometimes they're panicking to the point that they don't even bother to remove the speakers. They just go. And sometimes they're in awe and like, it's a great thing. And this one, I remember this case, the mother was visibly shaken, as
mm-hmm.
I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was definitely, you know, unexplained for them, but nobody else seemed to see it. Very strange.
Well, could it be? I mean, I guess anything could be, but could it be that when the UFOs get to a certain level or something, they can kind of shut everybody off in a sense and only like go after one person to be seen? I mean, can they have some control and
yeah,
at the time, like, you know, freeze frame or something, you know, there would be one left behind that saw it, but she forgot it too. I mean, she didn't remember it until years later, according to the story. So now every time I go have to drive by there, I'm going to chuckle. Because it's not that far. Every so often you go by it. It's like, okay, that's the drive-in where that sighting was or whatever. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing. So, let me see. What exactly do people who have these sightings during these encounters? You've talked about cigar-shaped and boomerang-shaped. But are they usually, do they see a single UFO or several in formation, or is there just no particular pattern that it just happens?
Most cases, it's a single UFO, but certainly not all. There are some where there are groups. There was one, the case that really clinched it for me, like, oh, they're putting on displays. I know it now. Was May 1963, George Fawcett. He's a major researcher. This was in Medford, Massachusetts, at the Wellington Circle Twin, and two glowing discs showed up. And that was followed by two more, and they were in little columns. And then two more came, tucking themselves underneath the first four, so now there's six,
mm-hmm.
and two more come. And so now there's two columns of UFOs, discs, four each. And for the next 45 minutes, they put on this kind of rotating musical chairs type of display.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I think in some cases they do show up more than one UFO, but it's usually a disc, you know, usually your classic flying saucer.
So where do you think they're coming from? Is it one place? Is it across the universe? I mean, are there different – well, we know they're from – what we hear. There's all kinds of different aliens. So is there any one particular, I don't want to call them a breed. That would be not good. But,
species.
You know, species, thank you. Is there one particular species that people seem to think, because you hear about the benevolent ones, you hear about the nasty little gray ones, you know, they're all over the place, but is there any kind of pattern in you, who you believe or know that are the ones that are actually doing all these things?
In terms of driving movies, no. We really have no idea. But I speculate it's a wide variety of ETs, because that's what we usually see in contact accounts. You know, we talk about the grays, and some people have, you know, not friendly encounters, or at least the ETs don't treat them, you know, cordially. They don't ask. They're kidnapping you. They're giving you a painful examination with very little information. It does not feel friendly at all. But I have talked to many people who've had utterly friendly encounters with grays. So you have a whole spectrum there and wide variety of grays. There's praying mantis type. There's human looking. There's, gosh, unique ones. I've got a case of a 9-foot-tall humanoid, 8-foot-tall humanoids. Short humanoids, dwarf-like creatures, midgets, you know, all kinds of just weird humanoids. So it's very hard to categorize. And even people talk about, oh, grays. I'm like, we better be careful here, because I'm not so sure grays are like all the same species or not. And I'm not even convinced that they're that different from us, because if they're interbreeding with us, that concerns me.
Yes. There's I had a guest on, Nick Redfern, who was talking about the blood types that have when they're crossbreeding, that a lot of people, humans, have a certain blood type, and that's sometimes indicative of the fact that they are crossbred.
Yeah, but not always.
No.
I've talked to people of all different races, all different ages. You know, and they can't all have the same blood type.
It's really fascinating. But okay, so here's the $64,000 question, and don't know that there's a regular answer. But why do you think the government and the military try to kind of pass these sightings off as a hoax or a misidentification? The Roswell thing, everybody said it was an Army Air Force balloon. And I'm of the assumption that where there's smoke, there is fire to some degree. So it's interesting that a great number of pilots and military personnel have reported seeing UFOs, and these are credible people. They should be credible witnesses, but people still think, and even the government, maybe in some areas, thinks it's still a bunch of hooey, or they're just not taking them seriously, or there's a big cover-up. So what do you think?
There's a big cover-up. got me started now. This makes me so angry. This is one of the real reasons I got involved in this field, because I just can't believe what I am seeing here. What we have is a situation where ETs are invading our planet, essentially. They've already done it. You know, they've been here for many, many years. And our own government knows it. They know it for sure, just as, you know, some of these driving movie cases show, which reached the highest level of government. That's not the only one that went to, you know, Wright-Patterson. A number of them did.
Yeah.
And a lot of these witnesses, as you said, were military witnesses. So they knew from the beginning what they were dealing with, visitors from other planets. We've got the documents that prove this. However, they were under orders to tell people this wasn't real. They use our tax dollars to fund, quote, UFO studies like Blue Book, like the Condon Committee, like the Robertson Panel, and say that, not real. There's nothing to this. There's no national security threat whatsoever. There's nothing to this. And in fact, ordered to debunk this phenomena and actually call witnesses incompetent or drug users or liars, and would do this to military personnel too, who they knew full well were competent witnesses, but would try to find something psychologically wrong with them so they could extract themselves out of a good case. Mm-hmm. So their behavior is reprehensible. It's unethical. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. It's paid for, but with our tax dollars. And I'm not having it anymore. This is done. And I'm really glad to see that to a large extent it is. There is a cover-up, but now we all know. It's demonstrable. It's not speculation. Not even a little bit. We know this is true. And times are changing.
Well, I was, in the last few years, I've had people on talking about this, and many of them predicted that the disclosure finally would come in 2020, but it looks like there's too many other things in the way if they were going to even think about it. 2020 is turning into a really weird year. But yeah. Do you think there is going to be full disclosure anytime soon?
Not what I would term full disclosure. We're going to be fed little spoonfuls of information. And that's what we've gotten. We've gotten one report, or actually three from the Pentagon? Mm-hmm. But the Tic Tac incident was the one that really electrified everybody, mm-hmm. at least the UFO community. Not everybody, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It kind of slipped right under the mainstream consciousness. And the Pentagon mm-hmm. recently... our officials said that, yes, we have materials from otherworldly vehicles. Flat out, full-on statement.
Mm-hmm.
And that also slid under the public radar. So this is what they're doing, and they're doing it in a way that doesn't, I don't know, wake people up to the fact that they're here. And what we're going to have to, they're going to feed us another spoon. I already know what the next spoon is.
Oh, yeah,
it's going to be a piece of metal. And we're like, we don't know what this is. I'm like, yes, you do. You know, shut up.
Well, they've already done that, haven't they? At Roswell, they claimed the metal pieces from the air balloon, Air Force balloon, were pieces of metal that they'd never been able to figure out what they were. I mean, it was whatever compound it was, they'd never seen before. So yeah,
But they won't admit that. They still think calling it a Mogul balloon. The witnesses mm-hmm. know. You know, all the military people involved know. But our government has not confirmed Roswell. That's what for me, that's what disclosure is. Like, yeah, Roswell happened. Here's the craft. Here's the body. We're very sorry we, you know, didn't release this sooner. And then I'll be fine. But until then, I am not having it.
They said that every president since Roswell has been to see the evidence, and they've been briefed about it, every single president. And yeah. Nobody said a word.
No, but they've made little veiled hints, haven't they? Reagan did, Obama did, certainly Ford and Carter talked publicly about UFOs, as has Trump for that matter. So... definitely, they know something. I'm not sure how in the loop they are, because really, this is run by the military-industrial complex, who isn't elected. You know, the one percenters, you know, who are will not let go. These greedy. They're on my naughty list. These guys.
yeah, I can hear your frustration. And before we go, I mean, I. You know, if anybody's interested, it's a real easy read, the book. The stories are kind of fascinating, and you can see a pattern. So if you're interested in it, you know, it's called Drive-Ins. It's not called Drive-Ins. it's go ahead, UFO Encounters at Drive-Ins.
Yeah.
And it's 100 true cases, and you know, they're short and sweet, but it tells a tale. So where can people find out about your books, which are many? And before I say that, I was going over your list of books, and there are a couple that I'd like to invite you back to talk about down the line. One is The Healing Power of UFOs, because that's really fascinating for me, and also Onboard UFO Encounters. So if it's okay with you, we'll be in touch about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can definitely find out about more of my books if you just go to my website, Google my name. It should take you there, PrestonDennett.Weebly.com. Can see, read excerpts and buy the book if you want, and contact me if you have a question or a comment or a story or whatever.
Or, yeah, I mean, if we've got like 30 seconds, but everybody in the chat room, if you think you've ever seen a UFO, wave or say yes or no in the chat room. Let's just see how many people have. And, you know, it's always a curiosity to me, because everybody kind of thinks they have. And
well, I'm waving because I've seen one.
There you go. I can feel a breeze. I really can. But, you know, as we're getting ready to do, I just, you know, kind of interesting to find out. But in the meantime, I want to tell everybody that next week my guest is Nicholas Pearson, and he's going to be, it's Ask Nicholas, Ask the Stone Guy Questions. So if you have any questions for Nicholas and you want to send him in ahead of time, go to my website, marlabrooks.com, send them over to me or send them over to me in Facebook. But you're really welcome to ask him anything when we're on the air too. So just giving you a heads up, something to think about ahead of time. And I got no, four no's so far. So, well, the night is young, you know. Maybe tonight you go out and look at the moon and there one might be. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, thank you for coming on to Preston. And like I said, I'll be in touch with you about upcoming shows. And I want to thank everybody for listening in. And as always, until next time, everybody. Blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
Circle be open, but unbroken. May the peace of the goddess be ever in your heart. Merry meet, and merry part, and merry meet again. Merry meet again. Merry meet again.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.